Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.
It's great to be diving into this again.
Today, we're opening up a really fascinating report. It looks closely, very closely, at the academic documentation of Kurdish oral history.
And it's an incredibly rich subject, isn't it? It covers so much ground.
Absolutely. Everything from, you know, the grand scale of epic poems and these historical narratives.
Right, the big story.
Down to really personal testimonies and even the quiet rhythms of, say, lullabies and folktales. It's a huge spectrum.
Mm-hmm. And these traditions, they're just absolutely crucial for the Kurdish people. We really need to understand that from the outset.
They're not just like background noise or simple entertainment, are they?
Not at all. They serve as these vital repositories, places where collective memory is stored, where cultural identity is shaped and maintained, and actually as a powerful form of resistance, too.
Especially, as the report points out, for a nation that historically has often been denied a sort of state-sanctioned, official, written history.
Precisely. In that context, these oral traditions, they step into that absolutely essential role. They carry the weight of the past, and they really shape the present.
So the report we're looking at today, it gives us a pretty comprehensive look at the current academic landscape. Basically, what has been the focus of study?
Yeah, what have scholars actually documented?
And critically, what areas remain, well, significantly under-documented? The gaps.
The gaps are key here.
So our aim today really is to explore the profound significance of this oral heritage, understand exactly where these knowledge gaps lie in the academic record.
Pinpoint them.
And then try to get into the complex reasons why these gaps exist, and maybe most importantly, what concrete steps might actually be taken to bridge them.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
And we'll be drawing directly from the analysis in this source material, guiding you through it.
Okay, let's begin then by setting the stage. Let's understand the foundation, the landscape, the sheer significance of Kurdish oral history. How does the report describe, you know, the breadth and depth of this tradition?
Well, it's described as this incredibly diverse, multifaceted tapestry. Think of it like woven threads of spoken, sung, and performed traditions.
So not just one thing.
Definitely not. Not a single monolithic entity at all, but a vibrant collection of many different forms. And each serves various purposes within the community.
That's right. And beyond the well-known epic poems, the report details this whole array of forms. There are different types of songs, right? Each with a specific kind of emotional, social function.
Exactly. You have lawic, which are typically love songs.
Yeah.
Then there are diluc songs, more for celebration, for happiness.
Yeah.
And then the sin, which are these incredibly poignant songs of mourning and lament.
And then you've got lullabies sung to generations of children, traditional folktales, the sirak, time-tested proverbs, the goten and patian, which kind of encapsulates collective wisdom.
Yeah, those little nuggets of truth passed down.
Historical narratives chronicling key events from a community's perspective, and these intensely personal testimonies capturing individual experiences. It's vast.
It really is. And who are the individuals who bear and transmit all this? The report really highlights the crucial role of traditional performers.
Like the Dengbejes.
Yes, exactly. The Dengbejes, who are the revered bards or epic singers, you know, mactors of these long, complex narratives. And also the Surukbeje, who are the dedicated storytellers, often focusing more on folktales and prose narratives.
And what's particularly fascinating here, the report emphasizes their function goes way beyond just entertainment or performance.
Way beyond. These individuals are described not just as performers, but as crucial repositories of cultural memory. They embody historical consciousness. They transmit social values, preserve linguistic diversity across different dialects.
Which is huge in itself.
Absolutely. And they actively shape collective identity through their work.
So in a context where, as we said, a formal state-sanctioned written history has often been denied or suppressed for Kurdish people, these oral traditions become the primary, the most vital means by which the past is remembered and heritage is preserved.
They are, in essence, the living history books of the people. It's that fundamental.
Precisely. The oral tradition functions as this basic vehicle for cultural transmission, generation to generation.
But as the report argues really powerfully, it's also a potent and enduring form of resistance against external pressures.
Resistance how?
Well, particularly against assimilationist policies and what the source explicitly calls linguicide, which is a strong term, meaning the deliberate extermination or suppression of languages.
Wow.
And this has been enacted historically and sometimes currently across the nation states where Kurds reside, Turkey, Iran, Iraq, Syria.
I was really struck by a description in the source material. It illustrates this point by calling the Dengbej a living archival repository.
Yes, I saw that too.
And even going so far as to label them a historian.
That framing is absolutely vital when you consider the historical context, these state-led efforts at cultural erasure, trying to suppress Kurdish language, identity, historical narratives. The Dengbej, through their performance, is actively counteracting that erasure.
And there's a Kurdish saying mentioned that really underscores this deep historical connection to orality. Cibre goten ebu.
From the beginning, there was the word.
Exactly. It's not just about language. It feels like a philosophical statement, highlighting how deeply rooted the spoken word is in Kurdish culture.
Especially when facing challenges with developing or using a state-sanctioned written language.
It's also inherently multifaceted, isn't it? The report notes this huge diversity within Kurdish oral tradition reflects the varied linguistic tapestry. Kurmanji, Sarani, Zazaki, Gorani, plus all the regional varieties.
Mm-hmm. And it also reflects significant cultural and religious diversity. Think about the distinct traditions of communities like the Yazidis, Alevi, Azir, San.
And this variety, this heterogeneity, presents a real challenge for academic documentation, doesn't it?
A huge challenge. If research doesn't meticulously delineate and address this internal diversity, acknowledging the unique forms, narratives, performance styles specific to different dialects, regions, communities.
Then what happens?
Well, it runs the significant risk of inadvertently homogenizing these really rich traditions, flattening their distinctiveness into a single, less nuanced narrative.
So the gap isn't just about which parts have been studied, but potentially how that crucial internal diversity has been approached, or maybe sometimes overlooked, in academic work.
Exactly. And that's why, as the report makes crystal clear, academic scrutiny and deliberately addressing these gaps aren't just important, they are absolutely imperative.
Why do these gaps matter so profoundly, then? It's not just about ticking boxes for scholars, is it?
Oh, absolutely not. Because filling them isn't just about completing some academic record. It's about allowing for the construction of a more complete, a more nuanced, and ultimately a more authentic understanding of Kurdish history, culture, society.
Getting beyond the potentially distorted narratives.
Precisely. Moving beyond narratives, often shaped by external or dominant forces, that historically sought to marginalize or misrepresent Kurdish experiences.
And this effort, it's framed as part of a larger process too, isn't it? Something about decolonizing knowledge.
Yes, that's a key point in the analysis. It's seen as vital work in decolonizing knowledge production within Kurdish studies itself. Actively identifying and challenging biases embedded in older research paradigms.
And by doing that,
amplifying the voices and perspectives that have been historically marginalized or silenced. And that includes the crucial narratives of women and various minority groups within Kurdish society.
The sources highlight something quite poignant here. Sometimes these subaltern voices from marginalized groups felt they had to use the forms or language of the powerful just to be seen as history.
Yeah, that's a really important observation. It underscores the urgent need for academic approaches that can validate and document oral traditions on their own terms, recognizing their intrinsic value without forcing them into predetermined, often external, molds.
And does scholarly attention help in practical ways, too, like preservation?
Absolutely. It plays a direct role in concrete preservation efforts.
Yeah.
Many of these oral forms, the specific dialects they're performed in, the unique knowledge systems they contain, they're genuinely endangered.
Threatened by what?
By rapid modernization, by forced displacement due to conflict or economic pressures, and by ongoing assimilationist state policies that erode language and cultural transmission. Documenting them academically is a critical form of safeguarding this vulnerable heritage.
The report also mentions the historical impact of Orientalist, imperial, or national interests shaping previous Kurdish studies.
Right. These external agendas sometimes influence what got studied, how it was interpreted, which narratives were prioritized. This just reinforces the need for objective gap identification and research driven by the community's own needs and perspectives, not external biases.
So as you noted earlier, it's far from just intellectual curiosity. The report suggests real-world impacts.
Tangible impacts. Mm. Academic validation can significantly bolster grassroots cultural revitalization efforts. It provides documented historical and cultural foundations that are profoundly relevant, potentially informing political claims for recognition, language rights, cultural autonomy. Oral traditions are fundamentally intertwined with cultural survival, identity, and resistance.
So research gives them legitimacy, visibility.
Exactly. it can potentially influence what gets into school curricula, what cultural programming gets support, what gets prioritized in archives. For a stateless people, strengthening cultural identity and having a documented historical foundation through rigorous research is a powerful act of reclaiming agency, challenging dominant narratives.
Meaning the gaps aren't just intellectual voids.
They have profound material consequences for the cultural and political agency of the Kurdish people.
Okay. And the report itself, its structure, is basically aiming to systematically identify and analyze these gaps.
That's right. It gives this overview we've just discussed, looks at current areas of focus, then gets into the specific lacunae, the gaps, the factors contributing to them, and finally suggesting pathways forward.
Right. Let's move into that second section then, the current academic landscape. Based on the report, what areas of Kurdish oral history have actually received significant scholarly attention? What does the documented research look like?
Well, a considerable volume of scholarly work is definitely concentrated on the Dengbejiyes. This seems particularly true for regions within what's historically Turkish Kurdistan.
And why them specifically?
Their pivotal role as custodians of memory, history, and language, especially crucial in the face of severe state suppression and the prohibition of the Kurdish language, that's something well-established and widely studied.
And the focus of this research on Dengbejiyes, it gets quite detailed.
Oh, yes. It often examines their performance styles, the specific content of their epic repertoire love songs, heroic tales, but also really important laments for historical events, wars, revolt leaders, and their critical social functions within communities, newsbearers, chroniclers, sources of collective comfort.
The report also mentions attention on the heritageization of the tradition. What's that?
That's the process where the tradition gets recognized, sometimes even institutionalized, as official cultural heritage. And it's often linked directly to language revitalization efforts, especially championed by modern Kurdish writers who draw inspiration from the Dengbejiyes.
Are other performers mentioned?
Yes. The report acknowledges some attention paid to others, though maybe less comprehensively. It mentions the Asheks among Khorasani Kurds in Iran, important in social gatherings, focusing on romance and epics, often with music.
Then Akuns.
Yes, Akuns are noted too. Storytellers in some regions using various mediums, not just spoken word, but prose, poetry, music, even puppetry for cultural narratives and moral lessons.
But the report introduces a potential issue here, a nuance regarding this focus.
It does. While the focus on Dengbejiyes is crucial and justified, this intense academic spotlight might, kind of inadvertently, create a sort of canon within Kurdish oral traditions.
Meaning it could overshadow other things.
Potentially, yes. Overshadowing other, perhaps less recognized or differently structured storytelling roles and genres that exist across diverse communities.
That makes sense. The report suggests that while distinct types like Akuns and Asheks are noted,
research on modern academic approaches to understanding traditional storytellers in a plural, comparative, encompassing sense, considering the full range, appears limited. If academic inquiry stays mostly on Dengbejiyes, we risk not fully capturing the immense diversity of oral performance.
Okay. Another area with significant and growing attention is the connection between orality and textuality, how oral traditions influenced modern Kurdish literature.
Yes, that's a big one. The profound influence of folklore, proverbs, narrative structures, linguistic features from oral traditions on modern Kurdish novels, poetry, drama that's well documented. Writers like Mehmet Uzun are frequently analyzed for consciously incorporating oral techniques, themes, the linguistic richness of spoken dialects.
And this isn't just seen as like a stylistic choice.
No, it's often interpreted as much more. As a deliberate act of cultural resistance, asserting Kurdish identity and continuity, where formal cultural expression was suppressed. Also as a strategy for language revitalization, breathing the dynamism of spoken language back into written text, especially where the language itself was attacked.
So using oral tradition is seen as bridging past and present, asserting identity, enriching modern literary language.
Exactly. Works by writers like Uzun and Mehmet Dikkel are examples of this heritageization strategy, treating oral tradition as a living source for contemporary creativity. The report even links this to writers like Yashar Kemal, drawing on the broader Anatolian Ashuk bard tradition, showing a wider regional connection.
So the influence on literature is explored, but the report highlights a potential gap within this area, less research on the reception.
That's a crucial point. Less academic focus exists on how these literary works, the ones incorporating orality, are received within diverse Kurdish communities themselves.
Raising the question, Do these adaptations feed back into or alter contemporary oral practices?
Precisely. Has Wu Xun's work changed how Dengbei's epics are performed or understood? The focus has been mainly on the writer's use of oral forms, less on how communities interact with or reinterpret these modern written works rooted in their own oral heritage. It's a potential one-way street in the research so far.
Okay, another crucial area where progress has been made: archival initiatives and collections. The report notes significant steps in preservation and accessibility.
Yes, these are absolutely vital for safeguarding traditions that are often intangible, vulnerable to loss. The report lists several notable examples contributing to this.
Such as the Vera Bowden Saidpour collection at Binghamton University, focused on refugee oral history.
Exactly. And the Jian Archives, with its specific mission to archive Kurdish women's histories from a non-Western feminist perspective, aiming to counter historical erasure.
Then there's the Kurdistan Memory Program, KMP, focusing on modern history, persecution, onfall, displacement, using multimedia.
Mm-hmm. Kashkul at the American University of Iraq Soleimani doing broader cultural preservation, including oral history projects on displacement and conflict, like Crux or Mosul Lives.
Harvard's Iranian Oral History Project is mentioned as potentially having Kurdish content,
though needing more detailed examination.
And the Syrian Oral History Archive, SAPERA, potentially holding Kurdish testimonies from the recent conflict.
Right. And finally, the Kurdistan Center for Arts and Culture, KSAIC GARFAT, actively digitizing materials across Kurdistan to make dispersed heritage more accessible.
This sounds like what the report calls an archival turn in Kurdish studies.
Yes, a growing recognition of the value of diverse archives, personal, institutional, diaspora collections, all contributing to a fuller picture.
These are definitely crucial steps. But despite this progress, the report makes it clear there are still significant challenges.
Absolutely. One major issue is the highly decentralized landscape, fragmentation.
Making it hard to find things.
Incredibly difficult for researchers and the public to locate comprehensive materials. Plus, variations in methodology, funding, technical standards across projects impact sustainability, interoperability, quality.
And practical issues like access restrictions, censorship, ownership.
All major complicating factors. State or private archive restrictions, potential censorship, unresolved property rights, especially with private collections. The report even mentions state intelligence agencies confiscating collections, highlighting the political vulnerability.
And the lack of a unified alphabet historically adds another layer of complexity.
Yes, it complicates cataloging and transcribing older oral materials accurately and consistently.
So the report concludes this bit on archives by saying the lack of a more integrated infrastructure could create digital divides or archival silences.
Exactly. Where access is uneven or certain materials remain hidden. It highlights a systemic gap, not just content, but the overarching framework needed for collection, preservation, accessibility, and sustainability.
Let's quickly touch on the dominant thematic focus in existing research using oral sources. Several themes stand out.
Yes, the report points to a concentration on national identity and nation building, how oral traditions were used by early intellectuals for crafting national consciousness.
Resistance in political consciousness is another prominent one.
Very much so. Analyzing how oral forms, songs, poems, stories, served as vehicles for expressing political stances, grievances, resistance against assimilation, oppression, state violence. Dengue Jureso's laments are cited as a specific example, providing counter-narratives.
Cultural memory and heritage preservation also central.
Acknowledging the fundamental role of storytelling in preserving collective memory, transmitting values, chronicling history from the people's perspective, often filling gaps left by official records.
Linguicide and language revitalization a critical concern.
Absolutely. Research examining the crucial role of oral traditions and literature in the survival and revitalization of Kurdish language amidst state suppression.
And finally, trauma and persecution.
A substantial focus, especially recently, linked to archives like KMP. Collecting and analyzing oral testimonies of genocide, displacement, attacks. Vital for documenting suffering, seeking justice.
Now, while this focus on conflict, trauma, resistance is understandable and vital.
Undeniably.
The report points out a potential gap here. This predominant focus might overshadow oral traditions reflecting more mundane everyday life.
That's the concern raised. The source material alludes to narratives outside these high drama themes. Grandmother's environmental stories, different song types, love, happiness, lullabies, daily customs, food, clothing. Academic interrogation of these everyday narratives seems less prevalent compared to conflict or identity themes.
And the consequence?
It could lead to a historical narrative from oral sources that, while powerful on conflict, might underrepresent the richness of traditions dealing with social norms, local economy, environmental knowledge, family life, community customs, not tied directly to upheaval.
So a gap exists where the full spectrum, including stability and daily life, isn't as systematically captured or analyzed through oral expressions.
That seems to be the argument.
Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Roj Bosh, Hannah.
Brilliant. Perfect timing.
Thank you, Hannah. Let's see. Today it's sips. Oh, wow. That hits the spot. Perfectly sweet today. Right on the money.
Mine too. Excellent. Thanks, Hannah. No extra sugar needed for this one. Much appreciated.
Sips. Okay. Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. After that brief and very welcome pause for some truly excellent chai.
Much needed.
We've covered the foundational role of Kurdish oral history and looked at where academic research has concentrated. Now, building on that, we get to the core issue the report identifies. Despite vital work being done, significant gaps persist in the academic record.
This is where we really zero in, right?
Yeah.
Delving into the specific lacunae, the areas highlighted as critically needing more attention.
And the first significant area identified as underexplored thematically is the oral histories of Kurdish women, specifically exploring their narratives beyond victimhood and resistance.
This is explicitly called out as a critical gap. While there's growing acknowledgement and initiatives like GN Archives are working on it, the broader spectrum of women's oral histories often remains underdocumented in mainstream research. Traditional archives often centered on war, men, political leaders, marginalizing women.
Exactly. There's a pressing need for research that actively uncovers and analyzes women's narratives, reflecting their diverse roles, family, community, society, documenting their unique knowledge systems, healing, agriculture, crafts, child rearing.
Exploring their artistic expressions, their perspectives on change, and crucially, their everyday agency, how they navigated daily life, made decisions, exerted influence, distinct from conflict or overt political struggle.
The report directly calls for documenting marginalized voices and lost stories, especially those of Kurdish women, emphasizing it's essential for a complete historical picture.
And what's particularly insightful is the mention of the effective qualities in voice recordings, especially women's. Paying attention to how things are said, the emotion, the performance nuances.
They reveal what?
Can carve out specific gendered subject positions and reveal aspects of Kurdish sociality, how relationships work, how communities function, often lost in just text. It suggests a depth of experience in women's oral histories needing extensive inquiry.
So what factors contribute to this persistent gap?
Several likely causes. Partly historical patriarchal structures devaluing women's narratives or confining them to the private sphere, making them less visible to early, often male researchers.
Compounded by early ethnographers focusing on male heroism.
Exactly. And while external repression affects everyone, women often face compounded vulnerabilities. This confluence of norms, biases, and external pressures result in an academic record failing to capture the full scope of women's contributions. Our understanding of the social fabric, internal dynamics, cultural transmission, resilience, agency remains incomplete.
Another discernible gap, narratives of daily life. Less academic focus on social, economic, and environmental histories through oral tradition.
The report highlights specific under-researched areas here. Traditional social structures beyond conflict-driven leadership, local economic practices, agricultural techniques, pastoralist knowledge, crafts, markets, trade, indigenous environmental knowledge, ethnobotany, land water management, narratives on flora fauna, responses to environmental change.
And local customs, festivals, rituals not tied to major political events.
Yes, those fundamental parts of community life. While sources might allude to these, mentioning different song types, grandmothers, environmental knowledge, folklore on customs dedicated, systematic academic analysis of oral histories centered on these everyday, non-conflict themes seems less prevalent.
Even though the archival turn notes interest in social, economic, environmental history.
The systematic use of oral sources for these detailed domains remains an open question. Even land ownership testimonies often get analyzed mainly through the lens of conflict or displacement.
But the sources mentioned connections to mountains, agricultural teachings, indigenous knowledge, and folklore.
Suggesting incredibly rich but under-researched areas waiting to be explored through systematic oral history.
Why does this gap persist? Is it just less dramatic?
Partly, perhaps. a tendency for projects, especially funded ones, to gravitate towards high drama, conflict, genocide, political figures. Understandable given the urgency and impact.
But the risks.
And neglecting oral histories, reflecting long-term processes, adaptations, everyday resilience. The imbalance risks overemphasizing conflict, obscuring the rich tapestry of social organization, economic life, environmental interaction, creativity that persisted alongside turmoil. The full picture isn't captured.
Next up, oral traditions of specific religious and ethnic subgroups. Beyond initial surveys, some foundational work exists on Yazidis, Alevis, Yarsan, but more depth is needed.
Significant need, yes. Existing studies often provide valuable initial surveys, but comprehensive documentation across their full diverse heritage is often lacking. Gaps persist in understanding internal diversity, regional variations, subsects, and the impact of recent conflicts, like on Yazidi laments post-ISIS. Smaller groups also need attention.
The report gives specific examples.
It does. For Yazidis, research often centers on religion, but their secular material and everyday narratives are overdue for academic study.
And for Alevis.
Research disproportionately focused on Turkish-speaking or Dersim Alevis, neglecting Kurdish Zaza-speaking Alevis elsewhere. Farko, Malatya, Karman.
Yarsan traditions face challenges too.
Declining knowledge of literary Gurani, the language of sacred texts, and the interplay between oral transmission and scripturalization.
And Kurdish Jews, Christians, Zoroastrians.
Explicitly noted as needing more focused attention. Kurdish Jews' history lacks written records due to exile, making oral history crucial. Kurdish Zoroastrian research is complicated by nationalist claims conflating things. Nuanced oral research with actual adherence is needed.
Why do these gaps persist for subgroups?
Complex factors. Political sensitivities around minorities, some groups' traditions being esoteric or secretive, sometimes a broader Kurdish nationalist focus emphasizing a unified, often majority Sunni Muslim identity, potentially marginalizing others.
And neglecting these traditions.
Leads to a severely incomplete understanding of Kurdish pluralism, syncretism, intercommunal dynamics, missing crucial perspectives.
Another big challenge, pre-20th century oral traditions.
Yeah.
Reconstructing these faces, methodological hurdles.
Considerable challenges, yes. Resulting in a major gap in understanding the deeper historical roots of Kurdish orality. Direct, systematic accounts from earlier centuries are remarkably scarce.
So researchers rely on indirect evidence.
Often, yes. Mentions in classical texts like Memezine, later folklore collections, biased external travelers' writings. Early 20th C intellectuals were interested, but methods weren't rigorous. Systematic collection came later. 20th C historiography relied more on state archives, with oral history as a field emerging more recently.
But sources say oral literature has always been in vogue.
Pointing to a long, vibrant, but less documented oral past. Evidence of transmitting ancient texts orally shows deep preservation traditions, but specific secular Kurdish narratives from very early periods aren't readily available in documented form.
So bridging this gap requires what?
Innovative interdisciplinary approaches. Combining textual analysis of older manuscripts, comparative folklore, historical linguistics, perhaps archaeology. Without this, the evolution, ancient forms, transformations remain limited. Foundations unclear.
Then there are geographical and dialectal imbalances. Uneven coverage across regions, Turkey, Iran, Iraq, Syria, and dialects. Kurmanji, Sarani, Zazaki, Gorani.
Notable imbalances, yes. More focus seems to have been on parts of Turkey and Iraq and the Kurmanji dialect in Turkey.
Why the imbalance?
Complex factors again. Mm-hmm. Geopolitics, fieldwork accessibility, local institutions, political prominence of groups, researchers' linguistic skills.
Right.
Orality literature research often focused on Turkey, Kurmanji Zazaki.
Examples of neglected areas.
Khorasani Kurds in Iran, the role of Kurdish Radio Baghdad. Iranian Kurdistan generally noted as understudied in some areas. Syria historically neglected too, impacting oral history work. Even within studied regions, imbalances like the Alevi focus mainly on Dersim. Endangered dialects like Zazaki highlight vulnerability.
What are the underlying causes?
Deeply rooted in political social realities, state policies on minority languages, local research infrastructure funding, diaspora international scholar interest access.
And the result?
A fragmented understanding. Unique regional genres, dialect forms overlooked or lost. Endangered dialects traditions at risk. The academic record is shaped by external pressures and internal disparities, not a neutral reflection.
Finally, perhaps the most uncharted area, non-Dengbej oral performers and genres, beyond the well-studied Dengbej.
A significant gap, yes. The focus on Dengbeyes, while justified, might have led to relative neglect of other storytellers, performers, and less epic, more informal genres permeating daily life.
The report notes, little attention is paid to modern approaches to traditional storytellers, in an encompassing sense.
Exactly. It moves beyond just the Dengbej model. Think of the Akuns using diverse mediums or Sirukbej focusing on folktales. Detailed academic studies on their techniques, roles, narratives are less common.
And the everyday genres, performed by non-specialists.
A huge variety. Local folktales, anecdotes, jokes, work songs, lullabies, children's rhymes games, proverbs, riddles, ritual chant songs.
These get mentioned but not studied in depth.
Generally, yes. In-depth studies on their performance contexts, social functions, linguistics, and crucially, the roles of unheralded transmitters. Elders, women, community members seem less common than Dengbei studies.
Resulting in?
A gap in understanding the full ecology of oral communication. Overlooking the vital role these everyday forms play in social life, values, entertainment, comfort, education, reflecting daily concerns and creativity. A bias towards professionalized, male-dominated, high-status performers misses the vast undercurrent of everyday orality, crucial for cultural sustenance. The record is incomplete without them.
That table and the source material summarizing the gap sounds really useful here.
It is. Lays out the theme. The gap, sources indicating it, potential research questions, very clear.
Okay, so they've mapped the landscape and identified these significant gaps. Now, let's unpack why they exist. The report gets into the complex factors contributing to and perpetuating them.
This section is crucial. It explores the underlying reasons, showing how the academic record is deeply shaped by external political forces, history, structural challenges, not just scholarly interest.
And one of the most formidable factors, maybe the most pervasive, is the shadow of political repression, assimilation, and linguicide.
Absolutely. The long, often brutal history of state policies explicitly aimed at suppressing Kurdish language and culture across the region has severely hindered transmission, performance, and documentation.
Linguicide, the extermination of languages, is highlighted
as particularly pertinent and devastating. Policies prohibiting Kurdish in public life, education, media, like in Turkey, 1925-1991, or current Syrian laws directly erode and cause loss of oral genres, vocabularies, dialects, many existing primarily orally.
Leading to a significant loss of culture.
Precisely because that culture was primarily passed orally.
Yeah.
Attack the language, you endanger the oral forms carrying the culture.
Plus the climate of fear.
Drives traditions underground. Public performance of narratives touching on identity, grievances, critique becomes dangerous. Leads to self-censorship, makes traditions less accessible to researchers who might face risks or be denied access. Ongoing pressures in Iran and Syria continue this.
So the causality is direct. Repression leads to fear, inhibits transmission performance, deters researchers, resulting in a lack of documentation.
Especially for traditions not aligning with state narratives or from suppressed dialects or marginalized communities, the silences in the record are often direct consequences of political violence and cultural suppression. Understanding this is fundamental.
Another major factor, archival challenges. Access, dispersal, digitization, ownership.
Yes. Valuable collected materials, recordings, transcriptions, notes are often widely dispersed. Countries, institutions, private hands, poorly cataloged, lacking preservation and digitization.
Kurdish heritage described as dispersed, destroyed, or hidden underground.
With restrictions on access to state archives, censorship, political control, and private ones. Trust, security, unresolved property rights. Even state intelligence confiscating collections is mentioned.
And the lack of standardized orthographies historically complicates things further.
Making early collections harder to transcribe accurately, harder to process and access today.
Digitization efforts face challenges too. Funding, expertise, accessing remote collections.
Significant challenges. Plus, the digital divide concern online access might not reach communities lacking connectivity or literacy. Practical issues like disorganization, cost, needing culturally correct metadata also persist.
And the ownership question is complex. Who owns heritage housed outside Kurdistan or in hostile states?
A profound concern. Kurds may not be in control of their own heritage, raising ethical questions about access, control, benefit.
Highlighting a contradiction. The archival turn recognizes value, but history and politics create huge barriers to collection, preservation, accessibility.
The gap is significantly in usability, accessibility, and sovereign control over what exists or could exist.
Methodological hurdles in a politicized and conflict-affected research landscape also contribute.
Significantly, fieldwork is fraught with complex methodological, ethical, and practical challenges. Due to the politicized environment, conflict, security risks, distrust. Needs adaptable, sensitive approaches.
What are the critical considerations?
Researcher positionality, inside-outsider, gender, politics, ethnicity, impacts trust, access. Safety anonymity of informants is paramount, especially with sensitive topics. Pervasive trauma affects memory, narration, willingness to share needs sensitive, trauma-informed techniques.
And the point about subaltern voices maybe using hegemonic forms to be seen as history
complicates capturing authentic narratives reflecting the community's own ways of understanding the past. Plus the usual unreliability of memory, exacerbated by trauma pressure time, needing careful verification while valuing subjective truth. Documentation difficulties in conflict zones add more complexity.
These methodological challenges are intertwined with political and archival issues.
Deeply. Political restrictions limit informant diversity. Fear leads to guarded testimonies, needs reflexive, adaptive, ethically grounded approach, prioritizing narrator-safe agency. A potential gap exists in academic literature detailing these context-specific methodological adaptations ethics.
Finally, institutional and funding disparities in Kurdish studies play a role.
A significant one. Compared to established fields, Kurdish studies often faces institutional neglect, insufficient, inconsistent funding globally.
Linked to statelessness. No central body for funding, coordination, archives.
Exactly. The source notes, only a small part. Research, need an institute. Research often left to individual scholars, limited resources, diaspora groups, underfunded local initiatives.
And institutions within nation states might face political pressures discouraging research.
Affecting curriculum, hiring, funding, creating challenging environments, even recent increased interest is often reactive, not sustained support. Positive initiatives highlight the deficit,
resulting in systemic under-resourcing perpetuating gaps.
Makes it hard to sustain projects, archives, translation, analysis, training new researchers, especially from within communities, creates a cycle. Lack of resources, limited output field, seen as niche, hinders funding. Breaking it needs capacity building, sustainable funding, supportive environments free from interference.
All right, we've mapped the landscape, identified the gaps, explored the complex reasons why. Now let's turn to bridging the divide. The imperative to address these gaps and the pathways the report suggests for future research.
Addressing these isn't just scholarly, it's presented as a critical imperative for complete historiography, heritage preservation, acknowledging diverse experiences.
Seen as essential for constructing a more authentic, comprehensive, polyvocal, many-voiced historiography.
Exactly. Moving beyond elite-dominant narratives to incorporate all segments, framed in human terms. The right of the Kurdish children to know their history, social memory. Storytelling preserves culture, intergenerational knowledge. Documentation preserves endangered heritage, linguistic diversity, dialects, artistic expression, indigenous knowledge.
And focused study empowers marginalized communities.
By validating their experiences, providing platforms for voices often overlooked or silenced, a vital corrective to state archives that omit distort. Rigorous study is historiographical rectification, cultural justice. For a stateless people, study validation is powerful for reclaiming agency, challenging bias, fostering accurate understanding.
So, what are the specific recommendations for future research agendas and methodological innovations?
First, targeted research priorities, directing attention and resources specifically to the identified gaps. Women beyond conflict, everyday life, specific religious ethnic groups, Yazidis, Alevis, Yarsan, Jews, Christians, Zoroastrians, etc., pre-20th C methods, under-researched regions dialects.
Community-based participatory research, CBPR, is deemed crucial.
Absolutely. Partnering with communities at all stages, design, collection, interpretation, archiving, dissemination, enhances trust, sensitivity, ethics, local ownership capacity, the principle. Knowledge production and memory preservation should be locally owned.
Interdisciplinary collaboration is also highlighted.
Necessary for this multifaceted subject. Teams, including oral historians, anthropologists, linguists, folklorists, sociologists, ethnomusicologists, literary scholars, digital humanists, brings diverse perspectives and methods.
Leveraging digital humanities.
Offers powerful tools. Recording, transcribing, AI assisted with human verification, analyzing large corpora, archiving, disseminating. Crucially, requires ethical considerations. Data security, privacy, IP, equitable access.
Attention to the acoustic register and performance, going beyond just text.
Strongly recommended. Analyze sonic qualities, emotion, performative aspects, how stories sound reveals gendered subjectivities, affective experiences, how sociality is forged, elements lost in transcription.
Developing context-specific ethical frameworks.
Paramount. robust guidelines tailored to unique political, social, cultural contexts. Prioritize informant safety, genuine ongoing informed consent, data sovereignty, community control, critical awareness of researchers' political ramifications, needs adaptive decolonizing approaches, countering power imbalances, prioritizing local perspectives, victim-centered, gender-sensitive, community-based projects for justice empowerment through narrative.
Finally, promoting collaborative and interdisciplinary approaches across the board.
Presented as essential, not just beneficial. Complexity plus challenges mean isolated efforts are insufficient. Foster partnerships. International plus local scholars, institutions, organizations, community groups. Builds local capacity, ensures relevance benefit, facilitates access, enriches with local knowledge linguistics, workshop series, Koshkul model are examples.
Needing networks, platforms for sharing.
Findings, methods, ethics, archives, journals, conferences, workshops, shared digital repositories with access controls, community ownership, collaborative grants.
And integrating findings systematically into broader Kurdish studies.
Using oral narratives as primary sources to enrich challenge history, inform literature, deepen sociocultural understanding, provide nuanced political perspectives. Interdisciplinary dialogue leads to holistic understanding.
So collaboration and interdisciplinarity are essential strategies.
Absolutely. No single entity has all expertise resource access. Sustainable progress needs a resilient, networked community. Scholars, archivists, activists, community members. Sharing knowledge, resources, ethics, collective vision is key to making significant, lasting inroads for a comprehensive representative record.
To wrap up this examination into the academic documentation of Kurdish oral history.
It's been quite a journey through this material.
We've seen how incredibly rich and vital this tradition is for the Kurdish people. Memory, identity, resistance, not just entertainment.
Absolutely fundamental.
And we've also identified, through this report's lens, some significant concerning gaps in the academic record, women's stories beyond conflict, everyday life narratives, traditions of specific religious ethnic groups, echoes before the 20th century, geographical dialectal imbalances, and the vast landscape beyond the Dengbesh.
A lot of ground still needs covering.
These gaps, as the report makes clear, aren't accidental. They're shaped by political pressures, archival challenges, difficult research environments, institutional disparities.
Those are rooted issues.
So filling them isn't just academic completeness. It's presented as an act of cultural justice, essential for a more authentic understanding of Kurdish history, vital for preserving endangered heritage.
It has real weight.
It calls for that clear, focused approach. Targeted research, community partnership, interdisciplinary work, thoughtful use of tech, attention to performance nuances, context-specific ethics.
A comprehensive strategy.
The path forward requires sustained commitment, investment, and crucially genuine collaboration, that networked community working together.
To ensure the diverse voices of Kurdistan are fully heard, documented, integrated into a richer, more accurate historical narrative for the future.
Here's a final thought for you, our listener, to consider as you reflect on this. If oral traditions are the primary way a people preserves its history and culture when written records are suppressed, what is the very existence and nature of these academic gaps tell us? Not just about what information is missing,
but perhaps about the enduring power and resilience of orality itself in the face of deliberate erasure.
And maybe what is our collective responsibility to truly listen and help preserve that which has been intentionally hidden?